welcome back to the Nerd Rundown's review of the season finale of the Loki TV series titled For All Time, Always, which gave us the Wonka reboot we never knew we needed. I'm your host, Darren Stemple, and with me are a multiverse of hosts, as we have my co-pilot right there, Eric Hare, and super guest host, Big Morg 3000 himself, Morgan Sano. Welcome, gentlemen, to this review. Looking forward to talking about this episode and beyond. The entire series as a whole was phenomenal. They hit the landing, which the previous MCU shows didn't necessarily hit the landing on, but this one did, and it not only set up the next couple movies, but it set up the next 8 to 10 years of story in the MCU, and it introduced us to our big bad moving forward, Kang the Conqueror. So with that, fellas, I want to get your quick reaction as a whole, and then we'll get into the episode. I'm going to start with the guest host, Mr. Big Morg himself. What'd you think, Morgan?
Thanks for having me back, first off.
Excited to be here. Love having you on.
I got to think, I got to do it. I'm going to butcher this, but I'm going to go, wow. Wow. Owen Wilson.
Wow.
No, I think that was pretty good.
Thank you. I don't want to say too much because I know we're going to talk about it, but no, I was very impressed. They stuck the landing, I thought, and much better than I expected, just based, with WandaVision, all the theories everybody had, and didn't pan out what we thought. This one did it. So yeah. I'll wait till we get more into it. But
yeah, for sure.
That was good.
Eric? Yeah, agreed. I thought they did a great job. The whole series, from start to finish was really, really great. This particular episode, I thought, was really fantastic. I think they used up, and we'll talk about it, they used up a lot of the action last episode, and they left this one with, let's get to the meat the meat of the story, and let's really kind of set this thing up going forward. And it didn't disappoint. So yeah,
big time. That's a great point. For an episode as big as it was, almost not a lot happened, but so much happened. We'll get into that. So right off the bat, with the Marvel Studios logo, something's different. We feel it right off the bat. They're playing the song that Cap is dancing with Peggy to when he goes back in time, as well as when he came back to his apartment to see Fury when Fury got shot by the Winter Soldier. So you hear that song, and then you start hearing quotes from the last, 12, 13 years of MCU movies, each character kind of getting their own. As the character shows up on the screen, they get their own quote. And then it pans out of our Milky Way, out of our universe, we're in a black hole apparently, and it goes to another black hole, and then it starts giving us quotes from this TV series, The Glorious Purpose, Sophia DiMartino's Sylvie gets a quote in there. So I thought that was very interesting that anything from this show was in the second black hole. And then, Vision's great line from WandaVision.
Yep.
About
grief.
Grief. Mm-hmm. Grief is just love persevering.
Yep.
Was in the second black hole. So that got me thinking about, and we'll get into some theories later on, but very interesting. Very cool visuals of, okay, here's what could be, what time and space could look like as you travel through black holes, and how, things are kind of stacked up on each other. So very, very nerdy stuff there. And we get right to the flow of time. The sound was so cool of the Ring of Time. Isn't that a book series? The Ring of Time, and we get to the asteroid with the Citadel and Loki's. The two Lokis are walking up, and we get into the Citadel, and boom, Miss Minutes scares you. And she reveals that it's He Who Remains at the end. So we get our first kind of big reveal of who the big bad of the series is, and it's He Who Remains. And a lot of people theorize that this could be the person there. It's not the comics He Who Remains. So I'll stop there. I'll start with you, Eric, and let me know what your thoughts were on everything leading up to that point.
Yeah, I loved the you know, you get the normal Marvel fanfare typically, and so when they changed that up, I was pretty surprised initially, and I actually had to go back and watch it a couple of times to really understand what they were doing. You know, the setup all leading up to the Miss Minutes sequence. The Miss Minutes sequence was really interesting to me because it almost was like a devil temptation. You know, like, hey, all you have to do is just take a bite of the apple, you know, and everything will go to where you want it, you know, and you'll get what you want. You get what you want. And he's figured out a way to do this, you know? And so, it was like this last temptation before you get the actual answers to what your questions have been, you know? And yeah. So, and surprisingly, you know, I guess unsurprisingly, because it would have ended the show pretty quickly if we'd done that. But, you know, they decline, you know, and so yeah. Then she's popped out and that was it. And so now you're moved on to phase, basically the second stage of the episode. So, but yeah, setup was really great. You know, and even her argument, Sylvie's argument with Loki she's about to kick the door in and she goes, look, I was around before you were born. You know, I just need a minute. I just need a minute here because this is the culmination of her vengeance. And I'll talk into that a little bit later too. You know, the culmination of her vengeance, is coming to a head and so she just needs a moment for her to kind of wrap around, because then later on in the episode, he asks her for a moment. You know, so she asked him for a moment at the very beginning of the episode, and then later on, he's asking her for a moment later. You know, so we'll talk about that later. But yeah,
great point. Great point.
Yeah. Yeah. Morg, how about you? Yeah.
Yeah. No, I mean, I love when Marvel does that. When in the opening, when you're hearing all this stuff from the past, it just, I don't know, it just makes you feel good. You know, you're like, you're like, oh yeah, okay, yeah. I remember this and this.
So many good things.
Oh yeah, it's great, and it, you know, I'm not sure quite what they were trying to represent with the, like, we went from one timeline to another is what it looked like. So what does that mean if they're supposed to be at the current moment where they're at? There's only one timeline, right? So what are we going from to and that? So I wasn't quite sure. Maybe we'll talk about that a little bit later. But yeah, when they get in there, and I admittedly did jump. You know, when Miss Minutes pops you. It did make me jump, but I like that they did do, you know, He Who Remains, which was the theory, but you know, we'll get more into it. The way they do it, I thought was great, because I got a little nervous at first in the sense of, I was like, okay, that's cool, they did that, but again, here we go, it's just kind of a, you know, a nothing, like, is it really going to make a difference? Like, do we really care? Like, it's just going to be some person we did, whatever, you know?
Right.
So I like that. And I, you know, well, I also like Loki did give Sylvie her minute to think in the beginning when they're like, to go in, and then obviously the door opens, but that'll come back later, I think, when you see, you know, the contrast of stuff that happens later.
Right.
But I'll wait till we get to that point, obviously. I don't want to dive too far ahead.
No, great point, gentlemen, and I didn't even think about that tying together with the give me a minute. So that I like that. And He Who Remains in the comics is actually the person who creates the TVA. He gets to the end of time and he creates the TVA, and it's a theory that he's actually an old, really old Mobius. And so not the kind of He Who Remains we get in this show. It's a different universe, different things can be different things. So I like how they did set that up and still pay homage to the comics with that. So after we get Miss Minutes and damn Marvel Studios, they do this. They put scenes in a trailer and then they don't show those scenes. And so as part of that devil's temptation was, hey, Loki, you want the Infinity Stones? You can have it. You want the Infinity Gauntlet? You want to be King Loki? And they shot scenes where he was King Loki, who's on the throne of Asgard, and they showed him in Stark Tower winning the Battle of New York. And they put those scenes in the trailer, and it messed with me, and it, I was saying Kang all season, and then finally I was like, no, it's going to probably be King Loki, and darn it. My final theory, which I thought was so well-versed in our last review, was wrong, but it turns out that it's somebody else, and we'll get to that real quick, but we're going to jump to the Judge Renslayer scenes, and we're going to cover both of them before we get back to the Citadel. So the first scene is very interesting between Miss Minutes and Judge Renslayer. Is she, Miss Minutes comes back and from the Citadel, and she says, sorry, I'm late. So the little itty bitty lines from Miss Minutes lets us know she's not necessarily a pre-recorded AI, that she is self-aware and can think. So she was coming from the Citadel and she was late. And then she gives Judge Renslayer different files than what she requested, and it changes Judge Renslayer from somebody who is on a mission to kind of save the TVA to somebody who, when Mobius shows up, she's like totally all about one person gets free will and I'm gonna go search for him. And I'm hoping that is her going to search for, obviously, Kang. So it's don't zap me. Drinking water.
Got the button.
I'm trying to better myself. Because in the comics, it's Ravonna Renslayer and Kang as the love interest. So I think she got the files from Miss Minutes from Kang, and it was like her story changed in a way that. We have yet to find out, but looking forward to seeing that. So what do you think,
well,
Eric?
Well, so does she get the information from Kang? Because is that Kang?
Okay, so let's set up some rules for this episode.
Yeah.
It is revealed in the next scene that that he who remains is a variant of Kang.
Correct. So Kang. the guy there is not Kang.
Not Kang the Conqueror.
Correct.
But it is Nathaniel Richards.
Yeah.
So Nathaniel Richards is a descendant of Reed Richards from the 31st century. He figures out that there's a multiverse, and at the same time that the other Nathaniel Richards from other verses figure it out too. And he talks about, he's like, you know, at first it was congratulatory piece and complimenting, nice nose, all that, which is a nod to Jonathan Majors' nose. But it's let's set up a rule that if we say King, it's sure. Jonathan Majors' character.
Fair.
Now this He Who Remains is a closer King variant to Immortus, which is a Kang variant.
Yeah.
There's a lot of Kang variants because he travels through time and creates a lot of variants. But overall, we'll get to that. So,
because what he this gives guy her,
gives her some files about something.
What he gives her, because he's overall, he's terrified of his other variants. Like he's terrified of his other variants, and specifically Kang, I think, you know, is who he's terrified of. And so I gotta think that he's giving her something that allows her to play some sort of role in defeating him at some point in the future. At least that would be my thought, you know, that because why not? Like, why?
If you're trying to be serious files, because it changes her from like, okay, I need to protect the TVA to I need to go in search of this. So whatever it is, it was serious.
Yeah. Because I think what happens is this guy knows what's going to happen. He obviously, we have the threshold scene, you know, and we'll talk about that, but he knows what's going to happen, and he knows, and so he needs, this is, so his, she's his plan B. So at least I think that's what,
that's good.
What that is. So, yeah.
Yep. Okay.
Yep.
Mark, what do you think of the Renslayer scenes?
Yeah. Because it's, well, I don't want to get too into the theories yet. I'm trying to hold out because there, I've been, you know, I'm watching stuff, reading stuff. There is a theory that I really, really like that I want to, I'll go into. Okay. But it involves, I do believe this file came from He Who Remains, the Kang that we see. I believe it came from him. And I, the purpose to it is something I'll get into when we start like theorizing the purpose.
I'm looking forward to hearing that.
Yeah.
But yeah, no. And also, I mean, we got to remember she left Mobius. So we are having a Mobius that's current, up to date, knows what's going on with everything. So I'm hoping that means we'll definitely get more Owen Wilson.
Yeah.
Yeah.
For yeah. season two.
For or sure.
For movies, whatever it may be.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yep. More Owen Wilson is always a good thing. Mm-hmm. Okay, so we get back to the Citadel. We start kind of seeing that this guy, this He Who Remains, this Immortus, is pretty powerful. He knows everything that's going to happen. They try to strike him down. He moves. He has a really great temp pad that he works with. He's got a script of everything that's being said or will be said. So how do you beat a guy that knows everything, right? And this gets into the following scenes are very exposition heavy in a good way.
Yep.
I may have preferred maybe a little bit more show than tell when it came to him talking about the multiversal war, yeah. as he used the little
yep.
animated,
yeah, whatever you want to call it,
kind of, yeah, like it looked like the Man of Steel thing, but
yeah,
I enjoyed it very much. For a Jonathan Majors just having killed so it. Much fun, just mm-hmm. killed it. Mm-hmm. Like it, he must have got on set and was like, threw his cape off, and he goes, "Let's do this," and I mean, just chewed scenery. So thank you, Jonathan Majors, for turning in an incredible performance. But
yeah.
he goes through the history of who he is, and you're right, Eric. When he talks about Loki, asks him something, and he says, "Or what are you afraid of?" He goes, "Well, me."
Right.
That was good, because then you knew, you know, he's talking about other variants. And so the long ago, the Miss Minutes video actually wasn't totally lying to us, in the sense that there was an old multiversal war, and this king figured out how to harness Eliath, and that helped trim all the multiverse into one sacred timeline. I'm still a little murky on how there's variants that look different from each other, is there really only one sacred timeline? I think that's something we'll learn as we go along.
Right.
But great scene of Kang or Immortus or He Who Remains, whatever we're calling him, giving that backstory and talking about the other Kangs and really setting the stage for what's to come when he reveals that he's kind of Willy Wonka and he's looking for his replacement.
Yeah.
So take it away, Eric.
Well, I was just going to ask you guys, did you notice that he talked differently when he was talking about Eliath? He said, one of my variants discovered Eliath, this creature that could consume time and material. He says, but then he switches from my other variant to I weaponized Eliath, and so he switched from talking about the other variants of him apparently had some sort of interaction with Eliath at some point or time, but He Who Remains is the one who weaponized Eliath and allowed him to, you know, pull a Thanos. And he's like, look, I've seen what happens when free will is allowed to happen and everything is allowed to run just roughshod, okay, you know, yeah. and it's a disaster. It's horrific.
Yeah.
So I'm going to do what nobody else is willing to do. I'm going to weaponize this Eliath creature to consume all of time and space outside of my particular one, and I'm going to make it so that at least one universe has some sort of peace and tranquility, and I'm going to be this benevolent dictator that, you know, and he even refers to himself as a dictator and a villain at some point. So we're all villains here, you know. When he says that to them, it both sets them both up, because they, you know, they both, and then he also yells at Sylvie for being a child. You know, grow up, Sylvie. You know, and
murderer.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So he puts them in their place, you know, very quickly. I think he does a great job of putting them in their place, but not in an insulting way. You know, he's very good. But I just thought it was interesting how the wording changed from he's referring to other variants to I, because I think that's the first time he ever says I did this, you know, and then that's how he was able to create this sacred timeline, if you will, you know, and so there is no timekeepers except for him. I mean, he is the only timekeeper, and he's been able to at least give this one universe for at least a portion of time a chance, you know, a chance to do it. And unfortunately, in order to do that, he has to do horrific things, which is cast off these innocent timelines, because there's really nothing nefarious about these other timelines and these other variants, these things that are happening, except they
like,
will
like Sylvie was just playing with her action.
Right. But when she does that, she creates a separate universe. In that separate universe is a horrific variant of him, and he has to kill that entire timeline to kill off himself and the destruction that he would pull in. And so that's, it's really deep. I think that's the one thing about Loki that I really have enjoyed, and of the multiverse, this whole multiverse stuff that's coming, is it is really deep. And to me, that's really fascinating. Because you can shallow, you could stay shallow, you could still stay the 1 inch deep and still understand what's happening. But if you really want to dive into the pool, the water, we're talking an abyss, you know, that you could go down into and really pull yourself, you know, and maybe even get in trouble. But I loved it. It was great. And Major's performance was just amazing.
There was a story that came out. I'll keep it for when we get to the theories, but there was a story this that came out this week from Kevin Feige. So remind me about that when we get to the theories. Cool.
Yeah, Mark.
Yeah, I like when we first, you know, when the elevator doors open, you have that anticipation of, all right, what are we going to get?
Yeah.
And then you see it, you know, and you're like, holy crap.
I was like, Kang!
It's Kang, right? They put him in the show. Yeah. Like, wow.
They did it.
I didn't expect that. But, again, we get the imagery. He's sitting there. He's eating that apple. You know, back to like Eric said, here's you're being tempted with the apple of, I can just make you whatever you want. You'll be fine.
Yeah.
You know, so we get that almost God, devil-like, just there, right? We see him. He knows everything going on. He's also a little crazy, to put it. You know, like you can tell it's like the classic trope. Yeah, it's the classic trope of, you know, Wonka, Yoda, Luke in the later movies, that when you just are alone, when you're just alone, you kind of get a little weird, you know?
Especially at the end of time. Yeah.
Right.
You know everything. What else are you going to do?
What are you going to do? And then he, as he's explaining what's going on, and he's telling, like, you know, you think I'm bad. Wait till you see what's out there. We learn again that Marvel's going with we're not just going to have we're going to have a generic bad guy. Just like Thanos was, and Thanos was, he had a purpose. Like, he was on a mission that he believed was the right thing to do to save everything. Mm-hmm. This guy's got his mission. He's doing the right thing to save everybody.
Right.
Yeah. Seems evil because he's getting rid of a lot of innocent people, but he's doing what he believes is right. And that weapon of the Eliath, like you said, you see that little bit of anger that he can have when he does talk about how I weaponized it, I destroyed. Right. Like, you see, like, oh, okay, like, he is a powerful guy, even this version we're seeing here. Mm-hmm. And, you know, all the Lokis are the same. All the variants are always the same. So even this guy's got a little bit of that.
Yeah.
I'm controlling everything, just like his other counterparts have, you know, it's just how they are.
It's a, this is the most benevolent of the right. variants. Right. Like he's the least evil of them all, and if he's the least evil of them all, my God.
Right.
Yeah, because what you think of what he's done is absolutely horrific.
Right.
I mean, he just is killing billions and billions of people all the time.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Every day, that's all he's doing is killing people. If you think like it's messed up, but
yeah,
and it looks
take
like
that, maybe, Thanos.
The time bombs. Are we thinking that's part of Eliath? Like, because you know how they like look like a purpley cloudy smoke, and then they get activated.
Oh,
like I'm wondering if he doesn't literally just mean he's got them like a guard dog. You know, he's also like, well, yeah, I took them and learned how to weaponize them.
Oh,
like,
yeah,
throw these bombs and just destroy stuff, wipe it out.
Yeah,
that's very
that play later.
Very interesting.
Do something with this Eliath.
That's very interesting, yeah, because in that little animation he shows, he's like, you can see the prune stick, you can see the the time bomb, yeah.
Exactly.
Interesting, exactly. Good catch there, Morg. I like that.
Yeah, so we'll see, hopefully.
Good is this why we bring you on, Morgan?
Yeah,
for right. Throw some stuff out there.
The nuggets.
Great job. Yeah, so again, Kang is Wonka, right? He's looking for his replacement. He's at the end of his time. He's a little crazy. What is he doing? What is there left to do? He knows that everything is leading to this moment, and he knows, okay, maybe I can have one of the Lokis or both of them take over for me. And if that's plan A, or, you know, not necessarily plan B, but the other option, multiversal war. And he even says it to him. He says, do you guys want, I forget the line. It was a really great line. It's like something along the lines of, you want dictatorship or do you want just all out war?
Right.
And so it leads to Loki versus Loki, Sylvie versus Loki. Great little scene to set up what comes next. And it's really, really great point by you, Eric, early on about Loki's just like, I'm not saying, oh my God.
Oh,
sorry, Mike. Sorry. I'm very excited. Nope, I'm not gonna play with it anymore.
Yeah, please not.
So
we could get a little Loki bony over here. Okay, yeah. So I forgot what I was saying. Sylvie was
Eric's point
of give me a minute, and Loki saying, give me a minute. He's not saying he wants the throne. He just wants a minute.
Right.
And,
we should talk about this.
Yeah, we should talk about this. He who remains planted a seed in Sylvie's mind. Do you think you could trust this guy? And that seed grew really fast, because if he's like, she's for sure there to kill him and in do her thing, whole life been leading up to this. And Loki's like, can we talk about this? And it makes the seed grow even faster in her head about, okay, all he wants is that throne.
Right.
So very interesting. And then the final piece of that, Loki versus Loki, is just maybe the best piece of acting from Tom Hiddleston in the entire series, when he says, I just want you to be, I don't want to hurt you.
Yeah.
I just want you to be okay. Like, some lotion. Great little scene. We'll stop there. Let's talk about Loki versus Loki. Morgan, go first.
Yeah, that was, I mean, it was an awesome scene. Like, you know, you kind of felt like it might happen, you know, obviously, because.
Oh, don't say obviously.
I was doing really well, too.
Damn, sorry.
You know, he who remains, Kang, plants the seed, does his thing. We'll get into the series again later about what I think's going on here. But you see, he talks about how he comes to a realization that it needs to be maybe two that's running this, which would lead you to believe that he has possibly tried this before.
Mm.
And now he's like, well, I realize I need, because if he knows everything, what changed? Where he's like, well, I think it might need to be two instead of one. So it kind of makes you believe maybe something here has happened before. But they get into the fight, that big dramatic fight, and then at the end, when he, you know, he says, hey, I just want you to be okay, I think we are really seeing a true, fully changed Loki.
Yep.
He is not the man he ever was.
Right. Yep.
And then when she turns,
what a great arc. Yeah.
Mm-hmm, and she turns, kisses him.
Finally, kiss.
I'm not you. Sends him
kicks
out.
Kicks him to the door.
Dead. You know, he's just boom, heartbroken at that moment.
Yeah.
We'll stop there because that's where we kind of stop the talk. Well,
and I apologize before jumping in here, Eric, because the threshold scene happened before the Loki versus Loki scene.
Yes. Yeah.
So we get to the point where He Who Remains, much like the Ancient One and Doctor Strange, they could not see past a certain point. And so they finally get to that scene, and it's a great little 10-second scene where Jonathan Majors, you could see the fear on his face that he finally, for the first time in a long time, he doesn't know what's next. He has fear and maybe a little bit of excitement, and
then you almost hear like a storm coming.
Yeah, it's almost like
the sound effect.
Storm.
Right, and you see that timeline start.
You see the timelines already started to branch.
Started to branch.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
So take it away, Eric.
Well, so definitely when that threshold gets crossed and you see those timelines start to split out, you already know, like if you really think about it, you already know what decision has been made, and it's not the one that he wanted, you know, because he even talks to them, you know, he tells them, look, you can go back to the TVA and you can be honest with them and tell them what their real mission is, you know, and the bureaucracy will continue on, the job will continue to do what it's supposed to do. The TVA will still do its role exactly as it's done. And the reason why it has to be two Lokis is because you guys are already villains. Like you've already done bad stuff, and now I'm telling you that you can do bad stuff for good reason, and and you're going to be okay with it because you're already damaged, you're already flawed, and the two of you have figured out where no other Loki has figured out completely, you know, and there were a couple that made it pretty far along, you know, the Richard Clark's version, Richard Grant's Loki, he made it pretty far into that self-realization, but these two are the ones that have made it, and obviously, you know, Tom Hiddleston's one has probably made it.
At least we all got one.
Yeah.
I think we missed one earlier from Eric, actually.
Tom Hiddleston's, that's because it was appropriate. Hiddleston's Loki is obviously, has had the fastest turnaround.
Once you open the floodgates.
Has had the quickest arc, you know, from that point where he loses to the Avengers, and then bam, he's here. And this happens in the span of these six episodes, you know, where in other versions of him, it takes a little bit longer to get him to where he needs to be. That being said, I think you're right, Morg, that he's trying something different this particular time, because he even says to them, it's okay, whatever you decide is okay, because we'll just be back here again. I'll be reincarnated, and it's reincarnation, you know, and I'll be back here, and we'll do this all over. We're destined to do this all over again. We're just in a time loop. So we'll just end up back here again. It'll be fine. And so Sylvie does what, you know,
she's destined to do.
She's destined to do. And I think, you know, like I said, Hiddleston's Loki asks her for that minute. Let's just talk about it. Let's just talk about what he's offering us, and she can't see past her own vengeance, you know, which is what makes our Loki the final Loki, you know, really the final Loki, because she can't grow any further, and he can, you know, he still has more to go, and she can't grow.
Great point.
She can't grow any further. And you see it when she finally does her job, and she sits down and she realizes that she's made the wrong choice, you know, and she pushes Loki into the time portal, you know, and then does her job. And then she sits, after she's done, she sits down and you know, the realization is hit her that she's made the wrong choice, you know,
made the wrong choice.
Right.
Yeah.
Or maybe she made the right choice. I don't know. She made the choice that she was supposed to make, I guess.
I think,
or whatever.
I think so, she's, yeah. I think she has the regret after it's all over. Yeah. She doesn't feel fulfilled and she understands. Well,
That's vengeance in itself.
Yeah,
it's
never fulfilling. Yeah, no.
and you know, we got to remember with her too. Loki saw his end.
Yeah,
yeah.
He knows his life and what happens to him.
Right.
She never got great that point. Experience.
Right.
And we got to remember our Loki essentially lived a full life.
Yeah.
Whereas she, however old Loki is supposed to be, thousands of years old.
Right.
Her thousands of year old has been nothing but running and not being able to trust anyone because everybody was out to kill her.
Right.
She didn't get to live.
You guys
life.
Are good. You guys are good.
You know?
Yeah.
So in that moment, when it comes to, she acted true to character because that's, we can't fault her. It's just literally all she's known for thousands of years. She's never had anything else.
Right.
And I think that's why you also see a little bit of that regret because you can tell, I think she knows she made the wrong choice because she was starting to get something she's never had.
Yeah.
But again, it's just in her, she can't help it.
In her nature. Well,
yeah. And it wasn't so much the killing of him in that moment.
Mm-hmm.
I think
it was more what she did.
I think what she did to Loki, pushing him through that time. She, the only person she could have trusted, you know, she rejected that person, you know, and he even said, he says, you know, I can't be trusted, you know, you can't trust and I can't be trusted. And so one of us has to make, and he takes that step and she doesn't, you know, he takes that step and says, look, I just want you to be okay. You know, I just want you to be okay. And then she says, well, I'm not you, you know, and so that's where that divergence comes. And it's like, man, it's, but again, I think ultimately she played the role she was supposed to play. She made the choice she was supposed to make, and perhaps it brings hope in something new. And I think, you know, we get a new iteration of the universe and we'll get this multiverse and maybe this is the chance to break that cycle over and over again and do it. But who knows? I don't know. We'll find out. So
what's next in that episode is just maybe the most glorious, pun intended, picture of the multiverse breaking open.
Yeah.
And so you see tons of branches coming off. And then when they all come, it's like it branches off so much that it all just becomes one. And it's this blurry mess of spectacular visuals. And you understand, okay, now you see how they're going to start weaving in these other storylines and how it all weaves together. And it's just the visual was incredible. I would have loved to be a part of that, creating that, and being like, how rewarding would it have been to be the creator of those visuals and just be like, this is what it looks like. Anyway, so in the final scene has Loki broken, heartbroken, trying to understand what's going on and what could happen, realizes he's in the TVA. I'll go find Mobius. So he's running through the TVA, runs through the library, finds Mobius and Hunter B-15. Actually, let me take a step back because it has a scene of Mobius and Hunter B-15 looking at the monitor of the timelines branching. Right. And Mobius says, okay, there's no going back now. And Hunter B-15's great line of, who said anything about going back? Great line. And you can tell this there's subtle differences. Mobius, his tie is loosened and his hair is messy. And the next, when Loki finds Hunter B-15 and Loki, Mobius tie is, it's tied up. He's he looks fresh and cut and clean and hasn't gone through hell. Right. And so Loki finds him. And he's like, hey, we got it. This is what happened. He's broken up the multiverse, blah, blah, blah. And they don't know him. And then it pans around the TVA and you see this giant statue of Kang the Conqueror in his comic accurate outfit. And you understand you're in a different TVA than what you thought. And I'm not sure what Eric's scrolling over there. Is
about, yeah.
Hopefully he's finding something good. But it's
sorry.
No, it's okay. It's I can tell you're in search of something really good.
Yeah.
So it's a really incredible way to end the season. Sets up, sets up maybe the next 8 to 10 years of storytelling in the MCU, sets up the big bad moving forward that can cross over through multiple franchises. And we get a mid-credit scene of like maybe the shortest mid-credit scene of all time, where it's just a stamp of it says Loki will return for season two. Important to note, that's the first MCU show getting a season two, and cannot wait. Because here's what happened after Endgame. You know you're losing Cap, you know you're losing Iron Man. You're like, can the MCU keep everybody's interest now without their two biggest stars, without the two biggest heroes? How do you get bigger than Thanos? Not only is the MCU kept my interest, but it has lit my fire again for what's to come. Okay. So before we talk about what's to come, let's talk about this show and talk about MVPs of the show. I want to know who you guys are, you know, who your MVP of the show is. Do you want me to give mine first, or do you want to go first?
Yeah, no, go ahead.
Yeah, you go first.
Yeah.
So, as great as Tom Hiddleston was, as great as Owen Wilson as Mobius was, so many great performances in the show. I think the true MVPs, Michael Waldron, Kate Herron, and Natalie Holt. Michael Waldron, the writer, Kate Herron, the director, Natalie Holt, the composer. Incredible, incredible jobs by Michael Waldron, the writer. The writing in the show was spectacular. It was the nerdiest show I've watched in a very long time. The concepts, the humor, the drama, the action, just all of it written so well. Every scene, there wasn't necessarily a scene that was a wasted scene in my mind. Even in the slowest episode, the third episode, Lamentous, slow scenes, every scene had meaning in that episode. Kate Herron directed the crap out of this series. Incredible job. Apparently she won't be back for season two, but she's now a household name and looking forward to what else she directs in the future. And Natalie Holt, I've been listening to this music nonstop for about 2 weeks now. I cannot wait till they release volume two of 4, 5, and 6, but there's variant versions of the music out on the internet that I've been listening to. There's the volume one through episode 1 through 3 music. It's incredible. She, for her first big project, what do you do from here?
Right.
I mean, it's incredible. So my hat's off to those three. Now, since you guys can't pick those three, sorry, give us your MVPs.
Mark.
Yeah, so I'll let you pronounce actors' names for me.
Okay.
Who you got? So Tom Hiddleston, you know, you want to say the standout.
Yeah.
He did a fantastic job. But for me, it was B-15.
Okay. Wumi Masaku.
Thank you. And Renslayer.
Oh, okay.
Because
Mbatha-Ra.
They had their characters had huge breakdowns that they had to show in less amount of time than anybody else got. So they had to really make you feel it in the whatever their screen time was. Now, obviously, not anywhere near as
much. Eric's ever, like, I know it's coming up. I'm
just as the other people. But every time they were on, you could feel it. I think they did a fantastic job with the screen time they got, and I think they're going to be when we get into the theories, huge, huge players in what's coming.
Okay.
Both characters.
I loved 100B15's Wumi Masaku's role. She, you're right. She didn't have as much screen time. She was maybe fourth or fifth on the title card. Mm-hmm. And she, every time she was on screen, she was captivating. I do think maybe Judge Renslayer's character, there's more to her that we haven't seen, and she's going to be a big player moving forward. So I'm looking forward to seeing what she's got. But she was a little bit more straightforward throughout the series, and very interesting turn there at the very end. So good choices. Good choice. The one scene where it was in episode 4, where Hunter B-15 is looking at the timeline, and she goes, we have to find them. It was her first, like, out of, you know, you could tell she wasn't the Hunter B-15 she was. And from there on, throughout the rest of the series, she was a major player in the show. So who you got, Eric?
You know, I'm going to go with the main cast, you know, the three, I guess, three main people.
At this point.
Yeah.
That's all.
So,
I was hoping you go with Alligator Loki, but whatever.
Yeah. You know what? Well, I am going to give a nod to, because I think Morgan makes a really great point. I'm going to tie it all into all of it in true Loki style. So your selection of the director and the writer and the composer. The composer, I hands down agree with you. Her music was amazing in this. The writer and the director do a great job of telling a concise story, a clean, concise story in 6 episodes. There's nothing wasted. There's no real, even the slower episode has a profound impact on the rest of the series. And so it doesn't really, it still is pretty amazing, which brings me to Morgan, you know, saying that the actors that he chose are because they do a great job in the short amount of time that they're available to tell the story, which I think is what makes the performance by Hiddleston and
Sophia DiMartino,
you know, as Sylvie, so incredibly important, because they do tell you in a very concise and quick way a really great tale, the emotion that they bring to the emotion that they both bring to this, and even Hiddleston right away, you know, because you're right, Mark, where he gets shown his entire timeline and he grows a tremendous amount in just that a little bit of thing where it's like, hey, this is what happens to you, you know, this is what happens, and this is your ending, at least in this particular timeline, this is what would happen to you, and this is where you would end up, and you know, you've got a choice. And so Mobius, Owen Wilson's Mobius, is really great too, because he provides that comic relief, but at the same time, who Hiddleston also provides a tremendous amount of comic relief. You know, his delivery is phenomenal. Owen Wilson provides a lot of good comic relief stuff while at the same time moving the story forward. And so I think to just tie it all three together, the writing, the directing, and then the performances by all the actors moving the storyline forward was just really great, and there was nothing wasted. And I think it's a good blueprint for a lot of other series to follow.
Yeah.
That you can tell a really great.
I gotta open the door for my dog. I apologize.
Yeah, it's all right.
He's gotta go
do his business. You know.
Oh, poor puppy.
Oh, poor.
Go ahead.
So, but yeah, I mean, like I said, I think all three of those elements all come together to put together this tale, and you get in 6 episodes, you've set up the entire MCU for the next 10 years, you know, and how great is that? In less than 6 hours of television, you've set up what really is going to be the future of this whole universe or multiverse, you know, if you will.
Right.
And to me, that's pretty MVP. you know, that's pretty MVP.
I mean, I'm not going to argue with any of you guys' statements, because if I had to pick out of the cast, I'd pick Owen Wilson, even though Tom Hiddleston, my God, what a performance.
Yep.
But what Owen Wilson did as Mobius, how he moved people forward, he even moved Richard E. Grant's classic Loki forward in a small amount of time.
Right.
In that campfire scene, he said something, you know, it's never too late to change. And it was just that was the last seed planted in classic Loki's mind to be able to come back and save the day there at the end. So he was incredible. And he got even better as the series went on, as Mobius started to kind of become aware of things going on. And as he started becoming more self-aware, to, you know, for lack of better terms, self-aware of what's going on, his performance was that scene right as he was getting pruned, when he went to Asgard, and then right when they came back out of Asgard, was the best acting in the entire show.
Yeah.
And that's saying something, because some of the stuff, that scene where Loki was like, I don't want to hurt you, I just want you to be okay, was top notch.
Yeah.
And the growth from Tom Hiddleston's Loki, maybe one of the best character arcs in a TV series ever. Yep. And it happened in less than 6 hours of TV. It was incredible.
Well, and to kind of go back, I think we may have skipped over it when we were talking about the Renslayer stuff. We skipped over the scene between Mobius and B-15 where they neutralize Renslayer. They send the TVA soldiers back in time to see her as a principal at the school, and they're like, wait a minute, you know, so they neutralize her. And he says, I don't think that's going to work out the way you, because, you know, she calls on the line. He's like, I don't think that's going to work out the way you want it to, you know, they neutralize Renslayer, you know, pretty easily in that point. And I think that also helps free her up to go do the mission that she's going to do, because now she's no longer the TVA, head of the TVA, you know, because now everybody at the TVA knows the score, the real score, and, of what's going on. So again, that's Mobius's character, them doing a great job of just moving things forward very quickly, you know, and not wasting any time. There's no fluff. Let's like just get to it, you know. Let's free her up. Let's cut all ties. Now she's off to do what she needs to do.
Yeah. So, Great point. Because that's a very important scene there, and it gives you the origin story of the Franklin D. Roosevelt pin.
Right. Yeah. Right.
Yeah. Yep.
Everything's got to have an origin story these days. Okay, so let's talk about what's next. So clearly what's next is What If, and what a great leeway into What If from this episode. And it's really going to whet our appetite of what the multiverse can do. And we don't know if this is going to have an impact on the larger MCU or not. We talked about it a little bit last week with the trailer release, but it for sure now you can see What If being a bit more important to the MCU, maybe not in terms of story, but in terms of understanding what the multiverse is and why it's so big and why it's so important. Because as we see, and here's an important thing about the multiverse breaking off, is time is a circle, okay, which means things can branch off at different times. And what's important about that is it's not all just like from our time right now, things start branching off from here. Star J.K. Simmons. And in that is, can you guys see me, hear me?
I see you now.
Well, you kind of cut out for just a second, so maybe back up about 10 seconds and start.
What was the last thing you heard me say?
Really, you were talking about the timelines branching and how time is a circle. So
yeah. Time is a circle.
Yeah.
Meaning things can branch off at different times. Right. So in the What If show, you see Peggy Carter became Captain America. You see T'Challa become Star-Lord. So it's not like these are things are happening at the same time and it branches off from there.
Yeah.
It is a circle, meaning things can branch off at different times. And so that also plays into that final scene where the TVA has changed, and it's not necessarily back to the future rules where you go back in time and things are, you know, Marty goes back and Biff is running the hotel and stuff, right? It's just that time is relative. It's a circle. Things can branch off at different times to cause things down that way to change. So I feel like I'm not explaining that well, but you guys understand what I'm saying about time is a circle and it's branching off at different times. So the what if will really play with that. The what if show will really play with that. Then we get to Shang-Chi. I don't think Shang-Chi is going to take place during the multiverse. I think that's going to take place during the snap. Because why else would Wong be in a tournament if he's not just kind of surviving and fighting Abomination? I don't know. There's other things to make me believe that it's happening during the snap and not necessarily after the snap or in real time in the MCU. Then we get to Eternals. And an interesting question was brought up immediately after Loki. Is this what brings the Eternals, not Thanos? Is the multiverse breaking what really brings the Eternals out of hiding? Because in the trailer, it talks about we've never interfered until now. And Eternals is going to spend, you know, thousands of years in that movie.
Right.
So are they going to get to Thanos and be like, meh? Or are they going to get to the multiverse and they're going to be like, holy crap, this is bad. And that's what brings out the Eternals. So that'll be interesting. Then we get to Spider-Man 3, No Way Home. And all the... I can't believe they didn't release a trailer for Spider-Man the next day, because it's confirmed to have Alfred Molina as Doc Ock 2 from Spider-Man 2. It's confirmed to have Jamie Foxx as Electro from Amazing Spider-Man 2. The big theory is that it's going to have Tobey Maguire's Spider-Man as well as Andrew Garfield's Spider-Man. And then we get to Doctor Strange 2 in the Multiverse of Madness. I can't, you know. And then down the road, you got Ant-Man 3 Quantumania, which is going to confirm to have Jonathan Majors. So what's next? What do you guys think? What are your theories?
Morg.
Yeah.
And Morgan, this is why we brought you on. Can you hear your
theory? I think that's going to be more important than we're expecting it to be.
Yeah.
I mean, I'd like to throw out the theory that what if is actually part of what leads up after Loki to the Multiverse of Madness. I would like to believe that that is our Doctor Strange from the movies.
Okay.
Being pulled into something, whether however they explain it, I don't know. Okay. But lets him know something's going on. That's big. That's just me. That's just kind of what I want.
Okay.
I don't think Wong fighting Abomination, I don't think that's going to be during the snap.
Okay.
I'm thinking Wong might be almost trying to do like a recruitment to get them to help. And for some reason, he just happens to be there and he's got to fight, whatever it may be, however they
get them to help what?
Recruit for this potential whatever's coming.
Okay.
You know, I think at this point, because Wong would know, just like Doctor Strange would know, there's something's going on. The multiverse, whatever it may be, I would think Wong would know, just like Doctor Strange would find out. They're buddies. They talk.
Okay.
You know, they're going to let each other know. So maybe he's kind of doing some sort of a recruitment or whatever it may be. Something's coming. We're going to have to fight. You know, I will say we did miss to mention that we did get the statue of Kang the Conqueror at the TVA.
I said it.
Did you?
Yeah.
Well, maybe I was letting Ghost out. I don't know. I'll pass.
No, it's okay.
But I think that's going to be huge. I think this show, I want to get back into the Loki show, is probably the biggest show that we're going to get out of the Disney shows, obviously. Sorry, guys. I should have brought me on. But I think Loki, our Loki, is the key to this next phase and everything that's going to happen moving forward.
Yeah.
It's not going to be Doctor Strange. It's not going to be Peter Parker. It's not going to be anyone else.
Wanda?
Not Wanda. She'll be a part, but I think Loki is going to be the key of solving what's coming.
It did come out this week that Loki is confirmed to be in Doctor Strange 2. So.
Right. So we know he's going to be in the movies, at least that one. I think he's going to be the key to fixing and changing whatever is coming and getting things either back to normal or different. You know, we know time's on a loop. We see it. It's a loop. It's never ending. We get to the point Sylvie fulfills her part, kills he who remains. All that is that's where time always stops for me. And now we're back to the cycle of everything's going to happen again. We're going to get the Kangs again. We're going to get the war again that he described, because that just always happens. He's going to solve it. Boom. He takes over everything and restores the timeline. It just always happens. It never ends. Except this time he said, well, what if I bring in another Loki? A Loki that's different, that changed, and maybe he can take over and will completely change the course of time, and this won't happen again. But boom, she betrays. So that's why I think he's going to be the big key moving forward, that he's the only one that can end this cycle that always happens. He has to be the one.
Yeah. Okay.
And Lokis are known for being an agent of change, so I think that's what he's got to be.
Okay. What you got, Eric?
Well, you know, that's interesting. And I think I mentioned it last week when we talked about Interstellar a little bit, which is one of my favorites, you know, where the girl asked, you know, McConaughey, why'd you guys name me, you know, because they named their kid Murph, you know, Murphy. And, you know, why'd you name me Murph? Why'd you name me after something bad? You know, and McConaughey goes, we didn't name you after something bad. We named you after Murphy's Law, you know, which is that anything can happen, will happen, you know, and that's not necessarily a bad thing. And I think Loki represents that pretty well, you know, that anything that can happen will happen. And I think you're right. I was talking to a friend of mine last night about Doctor Strange. My friend Mindy, her husband Gage, they're watching through the MCU right now. And they both were like, they checked out on Doctor Strange. And I said, you know, I said, I get it, you know, but you really don't have any idea how important Doctor Strange is to the overall MCU. And it doesn't feel like it. It doesn't look like it. But he is probably the most important character of the MCU, at least in my eyes, you know, leading up to Endgame, because of what he represents and the stuff that he does. But you obviously capped. You know, Cap and Iron Man, they get all the glory and all that stuff, you know, but Strange's role is pivotal.
Yeah,
it's absolutely pivotal. And I think you're right where Loki is going to be that moving forward. And I think Strange will play, and I think Wanda and all of them will help play roles in getting us further down, but I think Loki is definitely going to be a huge key to getting us out of this loop of this continuous cycle of this guy coming along and destroying everything and stuff. And yeah, you know, so when I was scrolling earlier, I wanted to try and remember what they were saying. You know, because the scene I thought where Mobius and B-15 are standing there talking, they said, you know, this is no turning back now. And she says, who said anything about turning back? And then they say, but then they go, so it's a different Mobius and different B-15 right. when they cut back to that, where he walks up to them. That's a different Mobius, you know, and he says, he looks at her and says 63 new branches in this unit alone. And then she says, does he want us to just let them all branch? You know, so they know,
mm-hmm.
they know who they're working for, you know, they know who they're working for in that sequence. And whereas prior to this, it's just the timekeepers and that other Mobius and that other B-15, they're like, there's no going back now, you know? So it's two different, it's the characters, two different variants of the same characters, stacked on each other like that really quickly. And I was like, whoa, that's, but I didn't pick up on it until you guys were talking about it, and I had to go back and read what they were saying. And so at this point they know what's happening, and they're working for, I guess that's Kang. I is that what we're saying, that yeah. statue is Kang the Conqueror?
Yep.
And he's
he's no longer in hiding. It's Kang the Conqueror. He is one of the classic Avengers villains. He's a bad dude, and in that timeline, because the branches started to branch before she kills him.
Yeah,
he kicks her through the door, and because it started to branch, she kicks him into a different universe.
Right.
Unknowingly, probably. And so apparently she kicks him into the King of the Conqueror universe, because it's the yeah. comic accurate costume on that statue.
Right.
And it's the King the Conqueror costume. So
interesting. Okay.
Yeah, he got kicked into the wrong universe.
Yeah. Right. Well, to go back and answer your question though, you know, what I think, what if, I don't know. I really don't. I'm a casual, you know, I fall back on the casual nerd type stuff. I don't know. I haven't followed any theories. I haven't watched any stuff like that. I really don't know where they're going with it. I did see this week that Kevin Feige and them sat down, and
yeah,
I think we skipped this in the rundown, you know, but they sat down and had kind of come to Jesus, I guess, meeting on what are the yeah. rules going to be for the multiverse moving forward, yeah. because, which I think is good, because this could descend into some serious chaos if you don't at least set some ground rules,
yeah.
yeah, and boundaries. And I think that's, again, that's how Marvel just,
that's why they're so good.
That's why they're so good, because they think ahead of this, and they're like, okay, these are the boxes.
All hail Kevin Feige.
This is the box you're allowed to work inside of, you know, and you could do a lot of really cool stuff inside that box, but this yeah. is the box you're allowed to live in. And if you can't live in that box, then we're going to move
then
on.
Then we're going to clip you.
Yep. Yeah, exactly. Yep.
Then we're going to prune you.
So
Feige is the ultimate.
Right.
That's the, what I was talking about, is there's a Kevin Feige mm-hmm. article that came out this week, and it just shows why he's the man.
Yeah.
I mean, there's no other studio that has a Kevin Feige. Star Wars wishes they had it. Warner Brothers wish they had it. And it's he runs the show, and it's why it's so successful, mm-hmm. because he's got the formula and he keeps it going for everybody. And thank you, all hail Kevin Feige.
Yep.
So I think right. it's, again, I don't know how big What If will be, how important. We may not even know till the final 2 minutes of What If, but it will wet the people's appetites. It will
yeah.
get you ready for the multiverse, because we're getting ready for a lot of multiverse of madness, and no pun intended there, but it is leading to that. And we may not even get it resolved in Doctor Strange 2, now that I think about it, because again, this could set up, it could set up all of Phase 4. It could set up all of Phase 5. And so I wouldn't be surprised if, you know, after Doctor Strange 2 and the Multiverse of Madness, we get multiverse stuff in Thor, Love and Thunder, in Ant-Man and the Wasp, Quantumania. There's something that's got to be there that ties the quantum realm to all this somehow. So we'll see.
My fear is they're going to... Well, and I shouldn't be a fear, because again, you got to trust in Kevin Feige. I really do, because it you can't make it too complicated for people. Otherwise, they'll lose interest and they'll move on.
Yeah.
You know, no matter how much they love Iron Man and Thor and yeah. Captain America. I mean, obviously, almost.
I'll drink.
With those characters, moving on to other things with Anthony Mackie moving as the new Captain America. We'll see how they replace Iron Man if they do. I've heard that Captain Marvel.
There's an Ironheart show coming up.
Yeah, the Captain Marvel stuff is supposed to be expanding to multiple characters, and so, so we'll see what happens.
We're gonna get a movie in 8 years, 8 to 10 years. We're gonna get a movie that's gonna have, it's gonna need to have the Avengers. It's gonna have to have the Young Avengers. It's gonna have to have the New Avengers. It's gonna have to have the Guardians of the Galaxy, whomever that may be at that point. Right. It's gonna have to be the Thunderbolts. I really think we're building to that. It's gonna, in order to take Kang down, you're gonna need the entirety of the Marvel Cinematic Universe at that point. Hopefully that includes Fantastic Four. Hopefully that includes
The X-Men, maybe.
The X-Men, you know. Fantastic Four has been announced. That's going to happen in Phase 4. Mm-hmm. Kang is a great Fantastic Four villain as well as the Avengers. He's Nathaniel Richards. He's a descendant of Reed Richards. So with that, we're going to wrap up here. Final thoughts. Start with you, guest host, Big Morg 3000.
Yeah, no, I mean, great series. I'm excited they're doing a season two, and I want to real quick back to my point that I think Loki's going to be the big
hero.
Yeah.
He does go to the Kang universe, we'll call it, they don't know who he is, so they don't know Loki.
Yeah.
That was very interesting. So he can literally be our inside man into this Kang army, because they don't know who he is. So I think he's going to be huge upcoming, and I'm looking forward to everything they have and what's coming. I'm pumped. I'm excited.
They're like, who's this analyst that just
right? They don't know.
He smells and he's sweaty and he's bloody. Who's this analyst? Because that shirt looks like it stinks. It's been through hell the last few episodes. Eric, your final thoughts there, buddy?
Yeah, I loved the series. I thought it was. I agree with Morg and you, probably best of the Marvel stuff so far. I really enjoyed the Falcon and Winter Soldier. And I can't wait to see if they do more of that. I would love to see more of that. WandaVision was really, really good. I thought WandaVision was very, very good. This is the best we've gotten so far, and I look forward to more. Season two sounds amazing. We'll see how that goes. Again, hats off to the entire team. Telling this story, the depth of this story in six episodes, just really great, really great. And a blueprint for more, although, we've talked about the streaming wars stuff from a business perspective. Six episodes is only people subscribing for 2 months, or maybe 1 month, of course, if they binge watch it or whatever, but that's 2 months worth of subscriptions. So, you stretch it out to 8 or 10 episodes, and now you got people streaming for three months, so I think we'll see how it is from a business perspective, but I loved it. Six episodes, great. If you could tell the story in that short amount of time and not miss out on anything, which they didn't, at least that I could see, they told a great story, got a tremendous performance out of all of their actors. So writing, directing, music, acting, all A+. I'm excited for. I hope Morg is right, because that would be cool to see Loki as the linchpin for the entire universe moving forward.
That'd
be
really cool. Really happy to write you on, Morg. Thank you so much for joining us.
It's been great.
You got really great points. We'll bring you back on again for sure, more often. You hit the threshold of the great points set. Loved it. I recommend it. People are watching it now. I'm just people who aren't watching it, recommend it. People who are watching it, love to talk about it. Tell us what you think in the comments, what you think of our series, where you think that things are going in the MCU. And with that being said, we love you. Thank you for tuning in. I gotta get out of here. So I appreciate you both. Love you both.
Yeah,
look forward
to having us.
More.
Thanks, buddy.
All right.
Appreciate it.
Peace.
See ya. Bye.